Welcome back to the DJ Rhett podcast. My name is DJ Rhett. As always, in studio right now, we're going to do our little political mini series that I like to call it. Mr. Dirk Guidry's in studio with us. He's running for state representative of District 53, right?
Got it.
Okay, yeah. Got it. All right. Which was occupied by Tanner McGee. Okay, yes. And he kind of stepping aside,
yes.
Right? I had talked to him a couple of days ago, and he's like, man, I just need a break.
Yeah.
Yes. He's got them little kids and everything, man. So, tell us about yourself. I mean, I know you from down the bar, Pizza Express, all of that stuff, and your time on the council and stuff. But just tell me your upbringing, where you're from, where you started, and just tell me a little bit about, right. I guess, tell us about Dirk Guidry that nobody knows okay. about, you know?
Thank you for allowing me to come on your podcast.
Not a problem, Red. Anytime.
Like you said, I'm a lifelong resident of Chauvin, Louisiana. We grew up in the marshes in South Louisiana. We trapped, we fished, we hunted. We enjoyed our childhood. You know, it was a simple childhood. And graduated from South Dearborn High School in 1973. First of all, we worked at the shrimp factories. You know what I mean? When we were 15 years old, you were allowed to go work at a shrimp factory, and we worked hard, long hours. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that was part of our growing up is in them days you worked, you know.
Right.
After graduating, I worked for Serbo, for Bobby Bergeron for a while. And, mm-hmm. and at 17 years old, I joined the United States Air Force.
Oh, okay. You flew some planes?
I flew in some planes. They wouldn't let me.
Oh, they wouldn't let you get
behind? No.
So you wasn't like, what's his name? You wasn't Maverick or
Goose.
Man. You were Goose. You wasn't Maverick.
I was a jet engine mechanic.
Oh, okay. But, all right. So you worked on it.
Yeah.
I got you.
I finished basic training. I was the youngest one. I was still 17 years old when I finished basic training. And after that, I went to school in Illinois for jet engine mechanic, and mm-hmm. from there, I got sent to California. I spent 2 years in California, and I got sent temporary duty from there to Thailand while the Vietnam War was ending. We were doing some work there, so mm-hmm. closing the bases up. And from there, I got sent to Germany. Lived in Germany for 2 years, got to travel all of Europe.
You know any Germany?
I know Germany.
You know any German?
I had a glass of beer. The first thing you learn was I had a glass of beer, bitte, one large beer, please. Yeah.
They got some good beer over there.
You got good beer and great wine and good food, you know? I mean, it's not the Cajun style of food, but
no,
they had
but
great
I mean,
food, you know?
I hear that German food is actually, and beer is like top
great,
notch.
Yes. Yeah. And they had a lot of good festivals like we have in South Louisiana, so.
They like to drink and get cassé.
Yeah,
like
but and it's family oriented, you know, the right. oompa-pa music and all that, but right. We had a great time. I don't regret that at all. From there, I got sent to Omaha, Nebraska, which is SAC headquarters, where we were in control of all the B-52 bombers, all the nuclear sites. And the main thing I did was there. We worked on the plane was called an E-4A, mm-hmm. and wherever the president went, this plane went with him. It was always right behind him.
So it's kind of like to shoot something out the air or whatever, like to protect it?
No, this was a mobile air command post where if a war would break out wherever he was, he would jump on this plane.
Oh, okay.
And there were a bunch of generals and all on the plane, and they could control the war from
that plane.
From that plane and never having to land.
So it's like the situation room plane.
Exactly. That's exactly what it was, you know. But I enjoyed it. You know, we got to... If I wanted to go to Washington or whatever, to the Pentagon or what, we could jump a flight on it. We could go for free, you mm-hmm. know. So it was nice, you know. And I got out of 1979, moved back to South Louisiana because I couldn't stand the cold in Omaha, Nebraska.
I bet you couldn't.
It got real.
I can't say it's cold today. It's November 1st that Coop Noir came through, and I came and take 40. So I bet it was really cold up there.
Yeah, I can remember going probably 30 days below zero, So, but it was time for a Cajun boy to come back home, and I came home. I worked a little while as an auto mechanic, and I had Martin's Auto repairing up a little car. Mm-hmm. And then I went shrimping, and I shrimped for about 3 years. Mm-hmm. And while I was in Omaha, right after I got out of the service in Omaha, I went for about 6 months to auto body school.
Okay.
And so I had
you're real mechanically inclined.
Yeah, so I had a little automobile shop, you know. I worked on cars on my time off. When I wouldn't be trawling, I'd work on a few cars. And then I worked a little while for about 2 years for Auto Candies. I was an engineer on the on supply boats. And during my time off, I'd go back to my little shop and worked. And after a few years, I got married to my wife, Wendy. Mm-hmm. We did body shop full time. Did that for about 12 years. And I always, with my travels around the world, I always seen all these pizza places.
Right.
And I said, man, one day I'm going to do this. So
I was wondering what made you get into the pizza business.
Well, and Steve Crispino, you know, I don't know if you... Well, Steve was a young bank at the time.
Uh-huh.
And when he wanted to get away from the bank, he'd come to the body shop and we'd shoot the breeze, you know. And, and I said, Steve, man, you know, one day I'd like to open up a pizza place. He said, well, man, go for it. I said, well, loan me the money, you know. So it went on for a little while, but we got the loan approved and we bought Pizza Express. And I worked still in my body shop. It was supposed to be something for my wife to do, but it got out of control and it's been a great business, you know. Friday's going to make 29 years we're making pizza.
I know, man. Yeah, I mean, I remember living down there. Actually, I lived in Presque Isle, and then we moved down the bar, and that was just our go-to spaghetti, the spaghetti plates and the pizza and all. But, it was awesome.
And you know, Rhett, the community has supported us great, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And growing in there, you know, and I could see and hear all the problems that people would come in. I said, you know, I'm going to run for the council.
Yeah.
I ran two times that were unsuccessful. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, no, I remember.
Two times I ran unsuccessful, and then I finally won, and we've been there for going on 12 years now. But going back, I've got two daughters, Crystal and Abby, and got three beautiful granddaughters. And
see them on the screen right
here? Yeah, I mean, we got a great
family.
Awesome family. No problems with any one of my kids at all, you know what I mean? And God blessed us for that, and they're great kids. So, but.
Yep. We were talking earlier before we got on the podcast. I said, Jeremy and Crystal, they live two streets down from me. And we kind of have this competition with our houses for Halloween. He does the whole like 12-foot skeleton. I think he's got like five of them. I can't even find one. He's got five of them. But yeah, we light up the neighborhood over here. So it's good people.
Sometimes he's we eating dinner at my house. We invite him all to come over and eat. And when he's got all these decorations up, he's watching it on his phone.
Right.
And something goes wrong with it. He's got to hurry up, jump out the house, hurry up, drive up here.
Oh, yeah.
And then take care of it and drive back home, you know?
That's like me. It's my wife. My wife's like, what are you doing in the living room like from 7 to 10? Making sure the lights stay on. I want to make sure that nobody, not because we get crowds of people that pull up and listen to the show and all of that stuff. And we just love doing it. So, So Jeremy, I'm going all out next year. So just,
if I tell him that, he's going to go buy more
stuff.
Oh,
I know. He's going to have a whole army of 12-foot skeletons.
But
so.
It's great to do that, you know, because a lot of people come through these neighborhoods just to see these decorations, you know?
Exactly. It's all about the community.
It is, you know, and we community-minded ourselves, you know what I mean? Like I said, I'll go back and say it again, but the community has supported us 100%. From day one, there was cars lined up on both sides of the restaurant, and we do a great job, and we got good food, you know? So, and it's a family-run business.
Yep.
My youngest daughter's been in there for 10, 12 years now. My oldest daughter, Krista, worked for 14 years with us, and now she's got a little family she takes care of, and we love them to death, but...
Yep.
We just love giving back to the community. I'm involved in a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So
tell me what, like I had cut you off when you started talking about this, but you had jumped into the political realm and you've been there 12 years ever since. Tell me when you got in there, tell me what you expected and what you didn't expect and what was, oh man, that what, or like eye opening or, You know, tell us something that the normal person, when they walk into like a government, you know, entity like that, tell me what's shocking, what's not shocking, you know, what took you by surprise, you know?
What took me by surprise is how to get stuff done.
Uh-huh.
A lot of red tape. But when a council person walks in there, the biggest thing is to find out how to get stuff done, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Really takes you, I'm going to tell you, it takes probably about a year and a half before you finally figure out what's going on, you know, and who to call for this problem and who to call for that problem. It's a lot more than people just think about, you know what I mean? It's hard decisions you got to make. Some people are pulling on you this way to vote this way. Some people, but you know what? vote your conscience and vote the way it should be done. Do it right.
Right, right.
And, you know, so.
Well, you got to vote for who put you in office, too. Like, well, you got to vote for the majority. And sometimes you'll get in there, and then you'll have the majority that want you to do something a certain way, and then you're in there, and you see it from that side, and you're like, you know, like. But that's what I like about transparency. That's what I like about doing, like, podcasts like this, because people get to know these people, and it's a chance for them to actually approach them and say, hey, I saw you on a podcast, or I saw you on this video, hey, and you talked about this. It kind of opens up doors for people, you know?
Right. And I think one good thing that I got going to for me that a lot of these council people don't have, I own my own pizza place down the bayou.
You get a lot of talk.
They walk in. They don't call me on the phone. They walk in. But you know, I'd rather that, because I'd rather talk to somebody face to face than on a telephone, because you could see what they're really about. You know?
And I mean, even in a pizza place, the politics is still there, but it goes out the window. You're having a slice of pizza and you're talking about real problems that's happening in the past. Yes. You know,
and you know the Cajun people down the bayou, they're coming in.
Them on.
They, oh yeah, yeah.
I used to love living down the bayou. I lived in my mom and dad had a bait shop in the 90s. And in the 2000s, that was right across from the VFW. And I used to live there, and I'd go up, and when I'd work, I'd stop at the little mini mart, and you see them old Cajun men just sit there, drink that coffee, and they're... But they, I mean, it was every day, you know? And yeah. I mean, if they'd had that much energy in the community and do that, it's very infectious when you hear stuff like
it
that.
It is. You know? I mean, we got great people live down these bars.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
And great people that live all through Terrebonne Parish.
Definitely.
They're genuine people. They're not fake people, you know, and that's what I like. I like the normal, everyday person, you know. No fake fronts. This is the way it is. Tell me what you got to tell me, and I'm going to tell you what I got to tell you.
Exactly.
And we're going to be friends, you know. And that's exactly. That's the way it should be in politics, you know.
It should be. I mean, I know it gets dirty. It gets in there, and it gets dirty because people are looking for the power. People are looking for the edge. But I think right now, I don't know if you noticed it, but I think right now in Terrebonne Parish, there's kind of like an awakening, like that we don't want the old system anymore. We want some new, fresh, and not saying anything that you've been on the council. I'm talking about like from a parish president standpoint and from just an overall perspective. Like, I think people are just, I think in the way I see it, people just kind of moseyed along the last 10, 15, 20 years. And then now after this hurricane hit us, we're like, wow, we got a lot of problems. We need to clean this up, and you know, here we go. So it's kind of cool to see a lot of fresh new faces in the political
world. It is, and I think everybody should do it. You know, the younger people got fresh ideas. You know,
right.
And you know, we got a couple of one of them that's running for parish president that's never been in politics before.
Right.
It's good to hear his ideas, and you're good to hear ideas from older politicians.
Right.
I had the opportunity to serve with Michelle Claudius, parish president, and Gordy Dove. So it was two different ways of operating. And I picked up good points from both of them, you know. And
right.
I mean, me and Michelle still great friends. We go out to eat dinner. I mean, I just went last week and I ate dinner with him. And we talk about it, you know.
Yep.
So, but
I talked to him the other day. He's a counselor on aging now.
Right. But yeah. I believe he told me in February he's going to retire.
He's going to retire, yeah.
He's going to retire. He got counselor on aging where... He likes it to be, and
yep.
You know, he's going to put somebody, I think he's going to hire somebody from within,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, I hope the council of aging can keep going like it is.
Because, oh, it's nice. I mean, they got so many things for, you know, the senior citizens to do. I went, I did leadership Terrebonne, and one of the classes that I took was was for the council on aging, and I never realized what they did over there. I mean, they do a lot of stuff for the elderly, like bingo games, parties, dress-up days, like all kind of stuff.
Right. You got some crews that go to the house. If you can't help, you know, you can't help yourself.
Mm-hmm.
They go out there and help you clean up a little bit and take care of you. But
yep.
There's a lot of things. And one of the main things I think that he accomplished was they had a waiting list for people to go and eat dinner.
Right.
And he worked around it, and there's zero people waiting now to get on the list. You know,
that's awesome.
It used to have to be somebody had to die for you to be able to get on there.
Right.
That's ridiculous with all the money that the council and agent has. They,
right.
You know, so, but they're doing a great job.
Oh, yeah.
But I love politics. I like it. It's good when you can help people.
Right.
You know.
And what made you want to take that next step to the state level now? I mean, you've done local for 12 years, and what made you want to take that plunge to go up to the next level?
Well, seeing all the problems that they still have, you know, and not to say that Canada didn't do a good job, because this delegation that we have between Canada, Barrow, and Jerome, they brought a lot of monies into Terrebonne Parish.
They sure did, yep.
Mm-hmm. I think last year they brought the second most into the parish than any other parish. I think the only one that beat them out was Lafayette.
Lafayette.
And they brought a lot of monies into Terrebonne, but I believe it's that love for the people, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's my big deal, is I love the people of Terrebonne Parish. They're good people, you know?
Yep.
And they just need a voice, a strong voice, to go into Baton Rouge and talk for them.
Right. I think, going back to that point, I think Terrebonne Parish, even though we're like one of the most, I mean, humbling, like just giving parishes, we also just don't say much. You know what we're saying? We're like, oh, okay, we're good, we're good. And then we get to a point where we are now, you know, where it was just the streets were bad. Everything was, crime was going up. The drugs is like out of control. I think that just kind of was like, you know, just kind of like a rude awakening for all of this. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And then I think those guys, Tanner, Jerome, all of them guys were like, okay, we see a need for Terrebonne Parish. Like, Terrebonne Parish is not going to be like, hey, we need some help over here. We're just not going to do that. And it's good that we got those people in there to get those dollars in there. And I mean, our levy systems are great right now. I think they're great. I mean, they could use a little here and there, you know, but I mean, it just depends on when that hurricane comes up. It could come up this way. It could come up that way. You don't know where that water is going to come from, but I think at least we have better protection than we ever did, you know?
Well, for sure. You know, they have brought a lot of money into Terrebonne Parish for our levy district. So, but you know, we have a great levy district, mm-hmm. you know, because if you can remember going back 10, 12 years ago, 13 years ago, we didn't have anything.
Right.
You know? And then,
I interviewed a couple of years ago, Tony Alford. He was like the president of the levy board. And they've done a lot of good things. I mean, he even says, hey, look, we don't have everything right. And he goes, you never will, because land is always going to be sinking. You're going to have water coming in, you know, and you got to mitigate these problems as much as you can. He says, but we're in the right direction. And, you know, it's true. We are in the right direction.
We are. And they're raising our levies right now to 15 foot. So hopefully we can get FEMA to recognize our levies. You know, that the only thing in my 12 years, the only tax that I voted for or pushed was that half-cent sales tax for the Morgana to the Gulf levy.
Right.
And that's brought in a little over, from the taxpayers of Terrebonne Parish, that's brought in over $420 million. Just from the taxpayers. But one good thing about that tax we passed, 40% of the tax comes from people outside of the Terrebonne Parish that pay for it, because they come to the shopping hubs on Martin Luther King. So that sale, we could have gone different ways about raising this tax, property mm-hmm. tax, different kind of ways, but we decided to do it with a sales tax. We were on about a 15 member board that all came up and decided, you know, the half cent sales tax was the best way. And I'm not in for taxes, but I mean, without doing that, we wouldn't have what we have today, you know?
Right.
And with seeing that, the state CPRA, seeing what we were doing with our money, we put up our money. So they came back and they gave over $1 billion
mm-hmm.
from the state government. So, I mean, you put up or you shut up, you know? And it's been a great deal, great accomplishment. I've been fighting for Morgana's to the Gulf way before they ever had one shovel of dirt put on it. And I've enjoyed it. I've been up and down the levees many and many a times, make many a board meetings on the levee district. And I even have a key to a lot of the gates. So if I want to go ride on the levees, I can, you know. So
right.
I've had a great working relationship with these guys.
Right. You talked to Cural and
Wendell.
Yeah, Wendell Cural, that dude right there. And you get caught in a conversation with him, he could tell you everything about salt water, everything about erosion. But that's what you need. You need somebody that's a nerd on that stuff. You know what I'm saying? And he, man, when he tells the stories of, you know, from Donisonville pumping that fresh water all the way down to South Lafourche, it's like, I mean, it sounds boring, but the way he says it is just, you could write a book on it. You really could write a book on it. And it's just, you know, we need somebody like that, you know, for our levee system, you know, down. And I think we're getting there, you know?
Yeah. That just goes to show, you know, sometimes you need new blood, but sometimes old blood with the knowledge that they have helps out. And he's always coming up with some kind of wisecrack that'll make you laugh.
Oh, yeah.
How you come up with this, Wendell? But he comes up with so many different ideas on how to get this done, you know, how to go get monies for this. And, you know,
he looks under every rock. I mean, he, you know, and it's like, and it's important too, because our industry down here, I mean, our economy is based on the water. I mean, everything you think of, our shrimping industry, our tourism industry, oil and gas, all of that stuff. It's water. It's water-based, you know? Always everybody asks us, why you live in Louisiana? They got hurricanes. Okay. It's the most unique place ever, okay? I'd rather take a chance on getting hit by a hurricane than go and live in boring...
Nebraska.
Yes, and freeze.
Yes. And look at the corn grow, you know? Exactly. Yeah, not a whole lot to do, but no, that's one thing we got. We got a great culture, you know what I mean? And we still got family.
Right.
You know, especially, I know down these bayous, everybody gets together and on Sundays, and we have fun and barbecue and drink a few beers, but, you know, it's the Cajun way of life, you know? Yeah, sometimes, you know, but no, getting back to what I love is, I mean, the knowledge that we're going to get ready to lose is Reggie Dupre is getting ready to retire.
Yes.
So that's a lot of knowledge going out the door, and Reggie was one of the people that started CPRA.
Uh-huh.
So he was the first chairman of CPRA, so he knew how to go about getting monies from CPRA, so we're going to be losing a lot of knowledge, you know. So.
Yeah, that's why, I mean, hopefully, I'm actually going to be doing some video, like a little video series to teach people about the levee system and stuff and go down there and, you know, kind of show why it's important, why it's vital. Like, if we don't do nothing to stop that erosion coming in, I mean, you're going to be able to launch your boat right here in Berg. And it's true.
Yeah, because I tell you, if we wouldn't have built the parish levees that we have now and the Morganza levees, Chauvin, all these bayous, Bayou de Large and all, and Grand Cay would all look totally different today than what they would be, because the way the water is rising and the land sinking, you know, you might say it's not true, but it's true. You know, it's all happening, and it's not based on one thing that it's all happening from, but, you know, damming off the Mississippi River back in the 1920s, not taking our care of our beaches like we should have did 40 years ago. We're losing land, we're subsiding, and, you know, we just need to do something about it. But first of all, we need to put, if we're going to save our beaches and all, we need to rock our beaches.
Yep.
You just can't keep pumping hundreds of million dollars worth of sand on beaches and letting the next storm come wash it away.
Right, you know,
and that's something, you know, that when I get to Baton Rouge, I'd like to really fight about is putting rocks on these beaches.
Right.
So
it's one of the projects that we're doing just to teach the kids. We're going into school and teaching them about, like, the difference between, like, sediment and sand versus a big old cinder block,
right,
you know?
Yeah.
And or any type of, like, I mean, when a hurricane comes in, they can move some stuff. They move cars, they move all, but it's very hard to move these rocks, you know? They kind of stay still a little bit. They might get pushed over a little bit, but, these rocks are going to work way better than sand. That's well, it, you know?
It shows at Coon Point and it shows at Grand Isle where all these scientists and environmentalists and all said that rocks wouldn't save the coast. So we put 300-foot segmented rocks on Coon Point, and they did a Grand Isle. They had 300-foot section of rocks, 300-foot opening, going all the way down the beach.
Right.
And they put it 300-foot off the beach. The sand built all the way up to the rocks.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So it shows that it works, you know? And Grand Isle, where they put them at Grand Isle, they put them in 9 foot of water. Now you could walk behind them rocks.
Yeah.
You know?
That's crazy.
So it just shows that it works.
It'll build itself back up because that sediment and has something to attach itself to. You know what I'm saying?
But, you know, Mother Nature's going to take care of itself. But, you know, all the bright people all over the world said it wouldn't work and there wasn't enough sediment floating around in the Gulf of Mexico, but there is, you know, so.
I just think it's a money racket. That's all it is.
It is, you know. $110 million, $115 million at Whiskey Island. $130 million on East Timberlake and all, but we need rocks, you know.
Yeah, rocks are going to make a way bigger difference than that. And I mean, but the problem is, though, is like you got, this is the word on the street. You know, you got the politicians that go in there and then they do the contractors. They come and they do the dirt and they move the dirt. And then like that's for 8 years, they dirt.
Right.
If you put one set of rocks there, then your partner ain't got work for 8 years.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
I'm with you, man. I'm with you. I'm 100% with you. You know?
And but, I mean, that's basically what it is. I mean, in a nutshell. But But yeah, that's why I want to get, you know, that's why it's great to get a fresh new look in there. And, you know, everybody always says when they get in, you know, and especially like the younger generation that's coming up, you got the older ones that are saying, you don't want to try something new. You got to stay with the old. And I find that's an interesting dynamic. Like, you know, the young and the old's getting ready to kind of, it looks like they're going to have no choice but to start working together. You know what I'm talking about? One of the things that I wanted to ask you going to this next level, what's like the three top things, your three top things that you want to prioritize on? I know like one thing is the insurance crisis that we're in right now.
For sure. You know,
I just paid $2,000 for a life insurance policy. I mean, a flood insurance policy.
Right.
And I got a letter in the mail from my mortgage company saying you are in a flood zone now. If you can't find insurance, we'll find it for you. And the quote they gave me was like $4,800. I'm like, are you crazy? Like, how are people going to, you know, pay for this? And if they don't, what's going to happen? Like, what is that? I'm assuming that's got to be on top of your priority list.
It's one of the top three for sure. You know what I mean? Because I know what I pay, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Between my homeowners and flood, I pay $11,000 a year. And, you know, I could afford it, but there's a lot of people like, elderly can't afford it.
No,
Young couples that want to move in on the buyers or whatever, they can't afford it because, you know, they buy at $100,000 house. The $100,000 home today is not much.
Nope.
But how can you go and pay $800 a month note for the house and have to pay $800 a month for insurance?
Yeah, $1,600.
So, you know, that's really going to drive the people out of these buyers and eventually into home of Louisiana, you know? So we need to go and fight. It has to be done mostly in Washington, you know what I mean? To fight with FEMA about this.
Right.
And that's one of the major things I'd like to do when I get to Baton Rouge is try to help with these flood policies because it's just going to ruin Terrebonne Parish.
Right,
you know?
Right.
But it's great. I mean, it's great that we can live with where we live, but let's not just let the government run us out.
Right, exactly. So insurance prior top. What will be your next two?
Oh, right now down the buys, you know it is the shrimp industry.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Imports right now are killing them.
Everything is killing these fishermen. There's a lot of these big boats that are tying up. They're not even going back out. When you're talking about a 10, 15 count shrimp going for 60 cents a pound, you could buy 2 pounds of 10, 15 shrimp cheaper. I mean, cheaper than you could buy a can of Vienna sauce.
Yeah,
if that makes sense, you know?
It don't make sense at all.
It makes no sense, you know? And
then you'll go to a seafood restaurant, and I mean, I don't know what they cook for, but you ask them what shrimp they get, and they say, oh, it's from Louisiana. No, it may have been packed in it's the United States.
Yeah.
May have been packed in the United States, but it wasn't caught in the United States. It was sent over here, you know, so don't let them fool you that way.
People say, you know, let's go to the restaurant and say, do you serve foreign or domestic shrimp? Mm-hmm. And they said that they sell foreign shrimp. So all you do is change the meal you're going to eat. You're not going to eat shrimp, so I'm eating a steak.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? It's not hurting these restaurants.
No.
They don't care if you eat a shrimp or a steak. No. They just worried about what that cash register rings up.
Exactly.
So the best thing for you to do, and a lot of businesses won't like what I'm saying, but if they sell foreign shrimp,
get up and go.
Get up and leave.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? That's the only true way to really hurt these people because, like, I'm in the business of pizza. I don't care if you buy a pizza, a pepperoni pizza or a ham pizza, just so you buy one of them.
Right, right.
And I make the same amount of money. So the best way to fight that these restaurants is get up and leave.
Right.
So,
right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know it sucks, and I know you're always trying to find out to lower your cost, and I mean that's the cost of business. You got to find out, but I mean it's almost like okay, you got to try to help out your local economy. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't like going downtown Houma and buy a $60 T-shirt in the local pubs. I'd rather go to Target and spend it and get $10 for a T-shirt. However, go show some love, to your local people. Go buy a T-shirt, maybe once every other month. Go, spend some money. Same thing needs to be done for our shrimping industry because, like you said earlier, you shrimp when you were little, right?
Yeah,
when you were younger.
Sure, yes,
I was. I remember going on a boat with my Papa Tinome. He had the Wade Junior.
Yep. Oh yeah.
And I mean, it was awesome to see, I mean, boat after boat after boat go down the bayou. You had shrimp and docks all along the bayou. My nanny Roxanne had one, Rocky
yeah,
Seafood,
right, yeah.
at the end. My wife, Holly, her grandpa, Price, had Price's Seafood. Yeah. I mean, it was everywhere. Now, you go down there, it's just empty buildings and people selling their shrimp on the side of the road because, I mean, you tax this way, you tax that way. Just to fill up a boat these days to go out there is just astronomical. And if they're only getting 60 cents a pound, they can't make no money.
I had one of my friends came in. He got a big freezer boat. They went out for 20 days. They had 40,000 pounds of shrimp. The boat made $5,000 for 20 days. You know what I mean?
That's ridiculous.
It's not going to happen. I mean, it's a dying breed. The only ones that are kind of making a little bit of money right now is these skiffs that are selling on the side of the roads.
Right. Or a live bait for bait. Catch for bait.
Right. Because if you go and price a live shrimp for a bait, it's $1,200, $1,300 a bushel for shrimp. You know what I mean? But I mean, that's one good thing that we got. We need to take care of our sports fishermen because they come down these bayous. They leave a lot of monies on these bayous. You know, with the economy for the seafood on the bayou, I've noticed where, since this has all been happening, I've got a decline in my business.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the Piggly Wiggly the other day, and they told me that they were cutting hours on their employees because all these big shrimp boats used to go make their grocery bills on that.
Tugboats, all of that. Yeah.
And, you know, eventually all these monies that these fishermen make on the bayous, they can't go south because that's the Gulf of Mexico. So they can't go spend their money there.
Right.
It all comes north. It comes to home of Louisiana. And people are going to suffer. They're going to feel with these fishermen, because it's millions of dollars of product that they sell, that they were selling every year.
Right.
And these monies go to home of Louisiana. People are going to suffer for it, you know?
It's true.
But the thing that we have to do, and when I go to Baton Rouge, is to make sure that we can talk and see about the trade, you know what I mean? The trade is unfair.
Right.
You know, and we need to get something done. You could do so much, you know, in Terrebonne Parish as a councilman or parish president. You could holler this about the seafood industry, and you could write resolutions and send them to Washington. And
it's more on a federal level.
Yes, you know, and you could do some of it in the state also, you know, but it's more of a federal, you know, with the Trade Commission and all that. But you need to form, I think, like, you know, being a legislature, a representative from Terrebonne Parish, we need to get with all these legislators and senators along the whole Gulf Coast, the East Coast, and form a coalition and try to fight, you know, Trade Commission
for the imports.
Yes, because it's ridiculous.
It's crippling everybody down here.
It is, you know, and that's the life and blood of some of these
communities. A lot of these people, you know? That's all they know. That's all they know. I mean, I hate to say it, a lot of them quit school. They're very low education to do that, you know, because it was the family business. My grandpa, he quit school, and he ended up going to the Marines, and then he came back, and that's all he did was trawl and make boats. That's all Tino did. And I mean, not saying he wasn't a smart man, he knew dollars and cents, but that's all he knew was trawling and making trawls and making boats. That's it.
Because I knew Tino, you know. Yeah. And he knew
Coors Light too. Right. He knew how to drink beer.
And he was a great musician on top of that. But
self-taught musician.
I can remember the big boat that they built on the bayou side where y'all lived at, the Miss Dot, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
People were so amazed at the size of this wooden vessel that they just, like you go back and see, people with no education. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but very good at their trade, you know?
Very good, you know? I mean, like all these big steel hull shrimp boats, these guys built these shrimp boats on their bayou side, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It was just amazing. I've helped them build a few of them, you know, and it's just amazing to know how to get the shape out of this, and they know how to do everything.
Man, it was like, I'd watch him, like when he'd make the bow of the boat come up, and he would just take a torch and he would lean that piece of wood in there, and then he'd varnish it up and then like sand it. And I'm like, bro, I'd have holes all over that. Mine would have sunk.
Mine too on a wooden boat. Yes, that was a great trade. And you had to be a craftsman.
Unbelievable.
You had to be a craftsman to build these things, you know. Right. And they'd have steam boxes where you can bend these boards to make the shapes and all that. So, And that's
unreal. And glue. And then they just,
unreal, you know.
I was like, God, no. And it looked so, like, perfect. I was like, God. That, you must have built thousands of these boats to make it that perfect. And they're like, no, this is, I. So I guess they just knew what their God-given talent was. Yeah, you know?
I knew your great-grandpa that used to build all
these swings
little,
and stuff. Yeah,
yep. he built some little boats too, you know? Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. They had a
pirogues and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, we called them some little canoes, you know what I mean? Yeah. But yeah, he'd build them on the bias out on Bayside Drive.
Buck Cracker Jack, we called him. Every time we go over there, he would always eat a box of Cracker Jacks and he'd give us the prize. Yeah.
But he was always building something in New York.
Always. And that man always lived off the land too. He had a garden. Yeah. He'd go crabbing. They'd eat ball crabs every day and whatever he grew in the garden, and he'd sit there and make his little whatever it was. And he had like 20 cats around the
house. But that's how people lived in the day. You know what I mean?
Easy.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And it was a good life.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't have to worry about paying all these insurance notes and all this stuff. When the water would come in for a hurricane, you just take the garden hose or whatever, a bucket of water, you'd rinse it out. And that night, you were sleeping back in the same
bed. Most of my papa and my wife's papa, Price, they would go in the boat. That when the hurricane would come, they'd just go in the trawl boat and they'd ride it out in the trawl boat. And I'm like, man, y'all crazy. They go, no, that's the safest place to be at. Yeah. You're just sitting there and just rock back and forth. Uh-huh. Water goes up, you go up with the water.
Yeah, because I can remember right there on the bias side by Sarah, they had a bunch of little piles, short piles knocked in the ground.
Uh-huh.
And that's where all the boats would come in, and they'd all live on these boats for the hurricane. Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah, so.
Oh, yeah, safest place on the water for the hurricane.
Safest place, you know. But like I say, growing up, man, it was a great way of life.
Oh, yeah. That's what I said. Yeah. Man, the boat blessing. It was so fun to go down there. Yeah. I mean, that was like a whole weekend of festivities, you know, because that was the economy. That is the bayou.
Yeah.
Trawling and music and Cajun and good food, good times, you know.
We had that and we had Lanyap. I mean,
It's dying, if you think about it.
Oh, yes, it's dying. All the communities would get together. I mean, like for Lanyap, everybody. And when I shrimped, I remember, you know, when around Lanyap time, we'd come on and we were coming home. And we'd say, well, we're going to pull one more drag. You know what I mean? This is the Lanyap drag.
That's the Lanyap drag, yeah.
Yep, and we'd save all the shrimp, and that's what was all donated to Lanyap, you know? And I mean, all the old ladies, they do the blackberries, and they do the shrimp boulettes and all that. And most of that was all donated stuff back in those days.
We did the dollhouse, and we made all the dolls and stuff, and that was out of our pocket, and we donated it all to the church, and it was... You know, it was a good time, and I think I just think now with technology and everything, people are just everything's so fast now. You know, it's now. Yeah. Whereas back then, it was like, man, we got a big fair, like it's approaching. We had patience back then. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like now we don't have patience for anything.
I mean, at that time, you know, St. Joseph's School was open, and then. They let us get out of class, you know, around Lanyap, and with all the young boys and all that, somebody had to pick an old pickup truck, and they sent us out down the road, y'all go cut palmettos, you know,
palmettos,
you know, and we
Rosos,
loved it. I
mean, all of that stuff, yeah.
But it kept a community together,
mm-hmm.
and that was the main thing, you know. I know it made a lot of money for the church, but I think the big deal was taking care and putting all the people
together. It was family, God, and community. That's all it was, down there. And I loved it, and... But like I said, like technology, we're just too fast. We want to get in and out where we don't really enjoy things anymore. But I think we're getting back to that point where, you know, we got all the stuff going on downtown right now. You know, the revitalization of downtown. It's nice to see. I don't know. Did you see all the pictures from Voice of the Wetlands and all this?
Oh, yes.
I cannot believe a home is on the map again,
man.
Yeah,
you know, Jonathan, I mean, they do a great job with the Rougarou Fest. Mm-hmm. You know, the Bayou Du Large Festival Fair is getting big, and it's great to see it happening again, you know, and where some of these families and communities are all getting back together. But going back to Rougarou, man, if you go walk them stands, that's all down the, most of it's all down the Bayou people.
That's
you know?
It.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah.
They all from, it's like the old Lanyap.
Yeah.
You know, because, and that's what Jonathan, you know, talking to Jonathan, he said it was two deals that he wanted to do. It was either the Blackberry Dumpling Festival or the Rougarou. And he said, I'm going to do the Rougarou. Now it's grown into like, I think it's the top three. Max, get down. I think it was the top three Halloween festival in the United States.
Yes.
Like, it's crazy. And then I think it got big enough to where he's like, you know what? I'm going to do the Blackberry Festival now. And they tried it, I think, in May, and it was successful.
Yeah. Oh,
you know? But I think he's got a different deal. I think they were going to do the money for a dog park or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's going to be, I mean, you got... you know, people like yourself, Jonathan, me, you know, Jason, Darren, all these guys, all these people that are running for all of these different things, and people that just want to get involved. I think we got some good times coming.
We do. You know what I mean? But and you got to go back, you know. And I'm gonna say something, you know, and some people might not like it, but
it's okay. That's what we're here for.
A lot of these politicians, you know, that's running for office, why do they just do it at election time? Why do you go on Facebook and you see that pictures doing this and doing that? Why not do it all the time? You know
exactly.
what I mean? I mean, like myself, I've been involved with the cooking team at South Terrebonne for years, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the cooking team at South Terrebonne, there's about 10 or 12 of us. There's nobody that has a kid that goes to South Terrebonne.
Right.
We do it for the kids, you know, and hopefully we feed the football team, the cheerleaders, the drill squad, the referees, everybody. And hopefully what we're hoping for is that after the football game, these guys come in, these football players come and eat, and they don't have to go on the highways and either get in trouble
right.
or maybe get in an accident. Another thing that I've been for years is the Thanksgiving dinner at the Ward 7.
Oh, yeah, that thing's awesome. Y'all, that's been going on for as long as I can
1985,
remember.
1985, Hurricane 1, Bobby Bergeron started that.
All right,
you know
that's
what
okay,
I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember right now, one.
Yeah.
I was like 7 or 8 years old when
right.
one came.
Yeah, that happened at the end of October, you know, and everybody didn't have a place to go, and
yep.
a lot of
a Category 1 hurricane,
yeah, but
just dump some water.
Man.
Yeah.
We flooded, and you know, that goes to show you what the Morganza would do, because if we'd have a Morganza at that time, you wouldn't even be talking about Hurricane 1.
Nope.
You know, it would just have been a little blip on the map, you
exactly.
know. And you know, that's part of why we need the Morganza to the Gulf Levee system,
mm-hmm.
for storms like this, you know.
And that'll sit there and just dump water,
water, and it just stayed. It wouldn't move, you know. But
right.
the amount of water that it put on us, a lot of homes flooded, you know.
Yeah.
And
I remember my mom. Well, we were in Presque Isle, but my whole family, I don't know if your family does this, they all live down the same street.
Oh, yeah, not far from each other.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So I got my whole family, they lived in, it's on Blaze Street in Central.
Uh-huh.
And they all flooded. And that just sucks, because it's like your whole family floods. So it's like, okay, instead of the mom and dad live with the brother and sister for a little while. No. Everybody's displaced,
yeah,
you know.
Sure.
So,
and you know, with that hurricane, one thing that you know that hurt me is my mom's house flooded. You know what I mean? And
mm-hmm.
and all my pictures that I've had while I traveled the world in the military, it all got wasted. You
yeah.
know, and that hurts me. Every once in a while, I still talk to a lot of friends that I served with, and they'll every once in a while they'll send me a picture of us in the military doing stuff. You
oh,
know?
That's
so,
awesome.
Yeah, because I mean that's the friendship that you make in the military that's gonna go to the day you die. You
right.
know what I mean? So, but. Getting back to the communities down the bay, we got great communities. I do whatever I can do for our community. For Hurricane Ida,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm going to go on that subject right there. When I got up the next morning, because I stayed home, I never left.
Me too.
I got up at daylight and started traveling down the bay, and I said, oh, my God, man, we have a humanitarian crisis here, you know?
Yep.
And I went up to the Sierra Bridge, and I started coming back down, and I could see all these houses tore down and knocked down and trees all over the place. There's telephones. I said, my God, I don't know what we're going to do. This has never been like this before. And I mean,
it looked like a bomb.
It did. You know what I mean?
I sent the drone up the next day, and I was like, oh my God, it looked like a bomb went off in Houma.
So I got up to, I seen all this. I said, oh my God, my pizza place got to be tore down, you know? And for some reason, God blessed me, man.
Mm-hmm.
I had a couple of awnings and a couple of little moldings off the building. And I said, thank you, Jesus, you know.
Isn't that crazy how,
it's crazy, yes,
how some
know?
People are unscathed
yeah, yeah.
with very little damage. Some people had minor to,
yeah.
you know, 50% damage. And then some people lost
everything, you know.
Everything.
Because yeah, my little awnings, they were in Chris Tucker's yard, you know. So I just went to Chris Tucker's. I drove up in the yard and I started heading down the bay and. And the further I went down the bay, the more damage they had, the more
mm-hmm.
damage they had. And I got all the way to the floodgates at Cocodrie, and I couldn't go no more because of all the trash
that
was
piled. The debris and everything,
yeah.
yeah.
Never thinking that they had 9 foot of water right down the inside, you
right,
know?
Right, right.
Because there was no water. The next
right.
morning, there was no water
in,
at all,
out.
In
yeah.
and out, you know? And
mm-hmm.
so I started coming back up the bay, taking pictures of a few of this, tears coming down my face because, you know, the difference with me is, as being a councilman down on the bayou, I knew everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in business. I knew.
You've worked with all these people before you went on the council.
When I seen the house tore down, I knew whose house it was, right. You know. And I worked my way back up to buy. They had a few people that was out of Ward 7, you know what I mean? So I got down and what are we going to do to help these people, you know? So I got in touch with people in town. So that's how the first pod that got started in Terrebonne Parish was started at the Ward 7 Citizens Club. Mm-hmm. I worked there for 35 days without ever leaving.
Yep.
You know,
I went video down there.
I needed to serve my community because I knew what kind of desperate situation they was in. I'd go to work there at 6:30 in the morning, and I'd work there till 6:30 at night, trying to take care of everybody. And, you know, people were so grateful just to have one bag of ice, you know what I mean? Because that was nothing, you know. No water, no electricity, no nothing. And
I think one thing, we've been through hurricanes before, okay? And we've been out of electricity for a little while, but we had never been out of water.
No.
And I was out of water for 10 days. And you don't know, like, you take it for granted turning on the water and washing your hands or just getting a sip of water or even flushing the toilet, okay? You take that for granted every day. Now, when you don't have that for 10 days...
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Right, and I tell you, we were at home, we were out for 20-something days without water, you know?
Yeah.
And with me being in the government and working with the military, you know, the National Guard and all this, and working with the Water Works District, they wanted to bring me, because I complained about the water, they wanted to bring me a water buffalo. That's something, you know?
Yeah.
And I say, you know, no, I don't want it. Because I want to be able to suffer like the rest of the people are suffering that way. I know I feel that pain,
right?
And I could fight harder for them because I'm living the same exact thing. I'm no better than nobody, you know what I mean?
But, right.
With my 35 days of working at the Ward 7, we fed a lot of people. I felt like I was helping everybody, and people would be crying, you know what I mean? They would cry and cry, you know, and I'd hold their hands or I'd hold them and...
I never cried so much in my life.
Me either, man. Tears fell down my face.
You know, you're a strong man, you know, but I mean, when you start seeing, like, I'm talking basic needs. Like, you know, I mean, hey, we all have problems paying mortgage, paying this, paying that, whatever, you know, life hits us. But when you have no water, no food, the babies had no diapers and no formula. You couldn't go get formula somewhere.
Nowhere, you know.
And it's just these people's faces when you give them, when I was there and helping, giving them little care bags of stuff. I mean, you could just see in their face that, like, you don't understand. Like, this is, like, y'all don't get it, you know. And I was like, no, we get it because we're just like y'all right now, you know. But yeah, when you go through something like that, it's it's very eye-opening. Right. Very eye-opening.
That August 29th, that's the day that COVID ended down in Chauvin, Louisiana.
Oh, yeah.
COVID ended all the Terrebonne Parish. It was over with. That was the least of our worries. But, you know, working...
That's exactly why we didn't leave, because my little girl had COVID.
Well,
and we didn't want to put her in the car and go bring her somewhere. So we said, we're just going to stay here, you know?
Yeah, well, 2 days before my mother-in-law was 99 years old, and one of the caretakers that came in that would take care of her before the hurricane... gave her COVID. She died 2 days before the hurricane.
Ah.
And a couple of days after she caught COVID, my wife threw them all out, you know what I mean? And she's going to take care of her mama. Well, her mama died 2 days before, and boom, the day before the hurricane, she comes down with COVID, you know?
Yeah.
And thank God she did a great job. I mean, while all the time I was working at the Ward 7, she was taking care of the problems around the house.
Yeah.
Because we had a lot of damage at home. I had rent houses that were tore up. My pizza place right here at Presqu'ile's tore out on the inside. But after working all these days and all with all these people at the Ward 7, they had a group out of Texas called the American Fallen. Well, they worked with me, and they seen how hard I worked for my people.
Mm-hmm.
And they presented me with an American flag that flew over the U.S. Capitol for the hard work and dedication that I had for my people. And
That's awesome.
It was signed by all of them. And then I worked probably for about 20 days with the Missouri National Guard.
Yeah, I remember them coming down. I was videoing them.
And the day before they were going to leave, they kept bugging me. Dirk, you're gonna be here tomorrow. Huh? I said, yeah, man, I'm here every day. You know, I'm coming back tomorrow. So when that bus is rolled up to pick them up, they say, come in the back. And they formed the full military ceremony. And in that ceremony, they presented me with a medal of excellence that they never, ever presented hardly to anybody else. You know what I mean?
That's awesome.
And it was an honor being a veteran, you know, and to get notarized by the veterans, you know?
Right, right.
And also, like, about 4 or 5 months after the hurricane, the Small Business Association, I worked hard with them.
Mm-hmm.
They put me in for a Phoenix Award out of Washington, D.C., you know? I didn't get the award. The one that got the award was the mayor out of Lake Charles. Thank God he got it because he had two hurricanes, you know?
Yeah.
He had a hurricane over
back
me.
Back to back now, yeah, man. So, at least you lost to somebody.
You know, yeah. But, you know, it was an honor to receive all these awards, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And people said, well, Dirk, where's the pictures, you know, that you took of you doing all this? I said, I didn't do it for a picture. I did it for my people. And the only picture I have of me doing something, Alonda Williams gave me a picture of me, her, and the sheriff. You know what I mean? So, but
yeah.
And that's what I was going back about all these politicians, you know, they want to take pictures of them doing this and them doing that. And they just do it around election time.
Or when there's a crisis.
That's not the way we live. Because it's the right thing to do. Even though nobody's looking,
right?
And you don't have to take pictures. People know what you're doing.
Oh yeah,
the people that you live with and you represent, they know what you're doing. So
right.
I don't blast that all over Facebook and all that, but I just love my people, and that's why I do it for them. You know? And
yeah.
If that storm would come up tomorrow again, hopefully we'll never have one. I'd do the exact same thing. I wouldn't change anything.
Hell yeah! I'd go down there. I mean, look, I kind of feel for y'all politicians too, because when it's good, it's you don't get credit. When it's bad, you get all the, what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Just like an NFL football quarterback, you know?
Yeah,
it's like when you're winning, you're the man. When you're losing, everybody hates you. You know what I'm talking about? It's kind of like that. So it's like you like to toot your own horn, but you don't want to toot your own horn in that manner. But I see what you're saying, because I just think that it rubs off on people. Like right after the hurricane, I was tired of seeing Terrebonne Parish look like crap. I mean, if you would have rolled down 90 or 182, oh my God. They had stuff all, mattresses, just stuff all over the place. And I was done with it. So I go live on Facebook and I said, I'm tired of it. And maybe I should have did it in a different way, but that passion, I'm tired of looking at this. Look, 15 minutes, watch this. And I mean, a difference, just a 10 by 10 section, just cleaning it up, knocking down the grass a little bit, making it look pretty, you know, a little bit. That went infectious. I called it the 5 gallon bucket challenge.
Right. Get
5 gallon.
Yeah.
And go pick up some trash. I think it goes back to what you were saying. I don't like to toot the own horn,
right,
but
yeah,
we do need to bring awareness and say, we can't do this all ourselves. You
no,
know what I'm saying?
No.
But I mean, when I saw you down there in Chauvin, like it made me want to do some more stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, bro, I mean, I'm sure you stunk to high hell, just like all of us. You know?
I was tired of taking a bath with a bottle of water.
Oh,
you know what
man.
I mean? But everybody stunk, so it was okay.
We had
okay.
that Intertech pool over here, and I almost every year I take it down, like at the end of the summer. And when school starts, and I'm like, I'm glad I didn't, because that was my bath. Like, I jumped in there. It was full of insulation, full of shingles, you know. But I mean, hey, that's what we had to do, you know.
My wife was fussing me because that's exactly what I do, you know. And she said, you're going to get naked right here and go take a bath? I said,
yep.
It's dark. There's no lights. Who's going to see me right here? You know what I mean? And for about 8-9 days, that's how, until the water started getting real black, you know what I mean? And said, my God. But working at that pot, you have some water in half-gallon jugs.
Uh-huh.
So I'd take 2 half-gallon jugs of water, and I'd wet myself down and soak myself
pass
up.
A rag
and then
on that.
The next one, I'd rinse. We worked on the shrimp boats with no water tanks.
Yeah.
They had a 55-gallon drum on the top of the cabin,
it.
And that's how we
water
took
it
back.
Water from the rain, that's it.
You know, yeah. So, but, I mean, I really enjoyed helping my people. You know what I mean? They needed me, and I was there to help them. So
yeah, it was good to see. I mean, even in the face of disaster like that, it's good. It brings out the good in people. It really does.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You find out who the true leaders are. And I commend you for I mean, being down there, because every time I went down there, you were in there. You know.
And you know, I got these awards, but it wasn't just me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like I got these awards presented to me, but it was from everybody that was helping because they had a lot of people. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's what I said. Mean, they had yeah, tons you know? Of people down there. But I mean, of course, you can't. I mean, when you got all those people, you need somebody there to kind of organize. Okay, all right, boom, boom. We're going to do this, that, and the other. Because, I mean, like you said, it was a humanitarian problem. People yeah. were scared. Yeah. People didn't have nothing to eat. People, nothing. You know, they had nowhere to go. No gas.
No.
Like nothing. You know, so.
Yeah, because after, well, after a couple of weeks, we finally got the government to bring in some tankers with fuel. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Because people were having to leave the bay and drive all the way to Lafayette for gas, you know? That's ridiculous.
Don't you think that's crazy how, let's just say, you know, I mean, and that we're going way above, but the United States government will send $100 billion to Israel, but we have a hurricane over here, and...
Yeah, well...
like, make a big announcement. Hey, we're going to send $100 billion to Louisiana. You yeah. know what I'm saying? Because they have a hurricane. You know, I hope... I mean, I know that's a, you know, a baby step in a federal direction, but I hope if you get in there... You can have conversations with people that can have conversations with it to be like, hey, look, you know, we understand the worldview, but
yeah,
you know, got to take care of our people first, you know.
And you know, now that we've had a major hurricane like this, I think OEP and everybody else in the government a little bit more prepared, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, you got to get hit by one of these bad daddies to see what it's like, you
right?
Know?
You know. And like to bring in these sites, you know, with the federal government to bring in. Tents and all that, these big tent cities and all that. That needs to be pre-planned before a major hurricane.
Yeah,
comes
not
in,
be
you know?
Not be proactive. Be be proactive, not reactive. Yeah, you know,
not wait 3 or 4 weeks after something happens.
You know, the storm's coming. Yeah. They tell us 21 days yeah, before the yeah. storm's going to hit us.
Yeah,
nowadays.
Right. Because when these in Afghanistan, when they were bringing all them Afghanis in, when we bailed out of Afghanistan.
Right.
They made these big tent cities in a couple of days, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Well, how about us?
Yeah,
we pay
exactly.
all these taxes. That's all money y'all doing with.
It's
come
true.
Help us down the bays, it's you true. Know? And but I think now that we've seen what a major hurricane could do, that we're a lot more prepared, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And give it to Earl and all at OEP. They did a fantastic job. The sheriff did a fantastic job.
Oh, man, yeah. You they did awesome. They really did awesome with very little because the station was... destroyed
right,
too.
Right, yeah, you know.
So you had I believe they in the new building now. It used to be Harvey's building.
Right, yeah.
For Trinity Tools.
I just
bought
went,
it.
I've been there a few times. Every time I go, you got to take me on a tour. With,
oh, yeah.
You know.
But, oh, yeah. But it's a good setup, right. And they had that, and they were telling us when I was doing Leadership Terrebonne, they were telling us how much of a struggle it was because you had deputies and you had policemen that were displaced.
Right.
Their
yes,
family
yes.
were
yes.
elsewhere, and they still had to come to work and help the people and do all of this. So they even had like therapists on
yeah.
site
to
help them talk to them and stuff like that. And I was like, man, counseling and stuff. Cause I mean, dude, it's very, I mean, I had to go to
yeah,
counseling
well,
after that. That's a very traumatic thing
we
to
had
go
counseling
through.
At the Ward 7 that would come in, you
oh,
know,
yeah,
yeah,
talk
if
to
anybody
people.
Needed it, you know, but the sheriff, he thought outside the box. He hurry up and he got trailers for his people,
oh, yeah.
you know, way before anybody else got it. So he thought outside the box to take care of his people. But mm-hmm. one thing I think that he did good for like down in these buyers is that he put a $1 million bail if somebody got caught looting.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
$1 million. And you were shipped out of town. So,
yep.
And that was great. I really loved him doing that. But speaking of the sheriff, I was with him yesterday and, the sheriff's going to endorse me for the House of Representatives.
Awesome,
so,
awesome.
You know, and like I said, he helped me with the hurricane, you know, and everybody. Mm-hmm. And he's seen the hard work and dedication I put in for my people. And
right.
So, and I've worked very closely with him. So I don't know if he announced it yet on Facebook or whatever, but I know he's supposed to do it today. So
nice.
I might be jumping the gun and then saying that, but I know he's going to endorse me, you know, and it's a great thing. It's coming from a great man, you know, a veteran.
Yeah.
We're both veterans, you know what I mean?
Right.
And so.
Yeah, I like Tim. Tim's a good sheriff, man.
He is. I mean, look, that's the first sheriff that goes on the polls in Terrebonne Parish.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? So
oh, yeah.
To go on the polls as a sheriff.
That means
somebody,
it's a good thing.
Somebody always thinks they can do better than you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh,
but,
yeah.
And he's a great guy, you know. And like I said, we work good for the hurricane together. His people,
Very military.
Yeah. Oh,
like
yeah,
very,
yeah,
very
yes,
respectful
yeah.
for anybody. He for talks anybody. To anybody. He's like, boom, you know, he yeah, stands up tall, yeah. you know, even though he's a short guy, he stands yeah. up tall. And
but
you know,
he's fair, you know what
he
I mean?
Is
he's
very fair.
For, he's fair for the people, and he's fair for the people that he works with, you
Definitely.
Know? So I love him to death, you know what I mean? Great guy. We just need more people like him around.
Definitely. Definitely. Know? And so, I think we're moving in the right direction.
We are. We
but
are.
You, okay, so insurance. We're going to end on your third one. And the second one was the shrimp. What's your third one? What would be your third priority?
Hurricane protection. I mean, we've spoke about that, you know.
Right.
And crime, you know. Crime's on the top of that. I've talked to Tim. We need to see about getting him a new jail where
yeah.
he could keep some of these criminals in jail. Because what's happening right now is the jail gets full, and he's got to let them out of jail. You know what I mean? Because
yeah.
every weekend you're getting a new crop in. So he's got to let
tour.
Some of them out.
I took
you
a
know?
Tour of Ashland a couple of months ago, and it's it took on some damage for the hurricane too. So, yeah, it's and it's a shame to see almost the same people in there
over and over again. Yeah.
So, I mean, to me, it's got to be some type of step we could do in between that to rehabilitate these people, give them a second chance. Because if you just throw them back on the street, what do you think is going to happen?
Second
you know?
Chances.
If you don't whip a dog, if he
yeah.
poos on the carpet,
right.
what's going
to
happen?
You train
him
not to poo
again.
On the carpet. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And that's one thing that we got to do. We got to help these first offenders out, or maybe even a second offender if it's not too bad of a crime. You
right.
know, we need to rehabilitate people, because putting incarcerating them and leaving them in there, that's not solving the problem.
No.
You know, they learn how to do more crimes in jail than if they.
It's true.
But and it all comes from drug abuse. You know what I mean? All
yeah.
these, most of all these, I'm not saying all of it, most of the crime that we have today come from drug abuse,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we need to see what we can do for drug abuse. Another thing that we had did on the council, we sued the opioid companies. And when I seen that from the discussion that it was going to pass the council to sue, you know, I hurry up and made sure, and I'm a politician, but I
mm-hmm.
made sure that the politicians couldn't get their greedy hands on that money.
On the money, yeah.
And I passed it where
some kind of way.
The only way, please, that money that we could spend would be for drug abuse, you know, to help out for rehabilitation, and then for mental health. So
yeah.
And we just got a check, our first check that we got, $647,000, I believe, and that's what it's going for. You know what I mean? But
mm-hmm.
also, you know, going back to crime, I think that we need to see about getting the crime lab in Terrebonne Parish.
Yeah.
The only crime lab that they have is in Baton Rouge. So if we could get a crime lab in Terrebonne Parish, but not where it's just Terrebonne Parish, but we could get the representatives from St. Charles, St. Mary, Assumption, Lafourche, all right here together, where we could all go to fight in Baton Rouge to get us a crime lab in Terrebonne Parish. Because I was talking with the sheriff last week, and some of these deals, like say a murder, sometimes it might take 5 or 6 months to get DNA back from a murder.
Yeah,
you know, and how many? What can they do in that 5 or 6 months? You know,
yeah,
it's ridiculous. You know,
yeah, that's weird.
And I mean,
you can get a loan in 5 minutes on your phone if you want to.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
you know, with the technology.
But it takes you 5 or 6 months to get a DNA for somebody that murdered somebody.
Ridiculous.
You know what I mean? It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I think that's one thing that we could do, you know, to speed up the deal, to solve some of these crimes and get these bad, bad criminals off the streets, you know.
Yeah.
But that's one thing that we really need to do, because wherever you go to talk about the thieves and this and that, you can't leave your lawnmower in the yard or
yeah.
whatever. Somebody's going to take it, you know, or you not in the house, they go steal wires out the wall, you know.
Right.
But
it's crazy too, because most of the houses in my neighborhood, we have cameras, and people are still coming
right.
stealing here.
Oh,
and we're
yes,
like,
yes.
they taking pictures, put on Facebook, you seen this guy? I'm like, no. And I look at my camera, man, he's walking in the street. And I'm like, y'all don't care no more.
No.
It's crazy.
2 weeks ago, somebody broke into my mini store. Just thank God they broke into my daughter's one and mine.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't know whose it was for.
Right.
But we got them on camera, and they know who they are, and they're going to be getting picked up. You
oh,
know what
wow.
I mean? So, and you know, like walking through and politicking door to door.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody got a Ring camera.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, everybody got
everybody.
A Ring, the alarm, you know.
You can't
the,
do nothing.
The, no, oh, no, 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 man. Don't even do
Big
nothing.
Brother.
Don't scratch your butt, you know, in the yard, because
somebody's
watching. Yeah, you know what I mean? But
it's true.
But it's sad that it's come to that.
No, it is.
It's,
it is.
You know, because the days we grew up, You left the car keys in the driveway all night long in the
exactly.
car.
Exactly. You come home when the porch light's on. You know, yeah. That was the alarm clock. You know,
people respected people, you know, and we lost that respect for each other. You know?
I think we just need to get back to that. We need to talk more. We need to put the technology and the phones down. We need to say hello. We need to smile to people more and get involved. You know?
Just like some of these subdivisions. Some people don't know who their next door neighbors are.
It's true.
Or they don't know who lives across the street.
They lived there for 20, 15 years.
Yeah, they don't know them.
They don't even
know
them, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and like, you know, and I'm not just saying this for down the by, but we know our neighbors, you know what I mean? Yeah. We go out in the yard and we talk to our neighbors, but, you know, because one time I went to my sister's house in Shreveport and the neighbor was pulling in the driveway, lived right across the street. I said, well, who's that guy? He says, I don't know. I never talked to him. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. My house.
That's
how can
weird.
You live by somebody yeah, never talk to him, man?
I know. I need to talk to whoever lives by me. They might be a weirdo. I don't want to live by them.
My wife fusses because I'm always talking to somebody. I don't care who they are. I'm going to talk to them.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
That's how I am, too.
But we need to be able to get together a lot more. You know what I mean? And
Well, I wish you the best of luck on your, on the endeavor and I hope it goes well for you, man.
Like I say, I'm doing it for the right reason because I love my people, you know, and I think I could go to Baton Rouge and do a good job for them. And so that's what I'm there for, to help out my people.
Hell yeah. So. Well, I appreciate it. And look, we usually end off on a fun note. So
yes,
I'm going to ask you some questions, okay?
Go ahead.
All right, this is the first one, right? I usually do three questions. All right. Have you ever been electrocuted before?
Yes, on the Chauvin Bridge.
On the Chauvin Bridge?
Chauvin Bridge,
Tell me about that.
You know how the swings open back and forth, how the swings? Well, one night we used to go to Fock with the South Louisiana Club. I might be a little bit before your time.
Probably, yeah.
Well, I put you know how they got the metal things where you drive on, the plates?
Yeah.
One night we were going to the dance, and I put my foot on one side of that metal plate, and where it swings at, I made the connection between the two bridges, and all I could do was I fell down on the bridge, and so I've been electrocuted.
I can't say that I have been electrocuted. Maybe just touch a little wire and out, but not like that.
And we didn't call nobody about it. We just went about our business, you know?
You didn't sleep for five days after that?
No, we was thinking about them little 14, 15-year-old girls at Falcon, right? We was going
dancing.
You
were energized after that.
Yes. My hair might have not been standing straight up, but
that's funny.
Yeah.
All right. Here's the next one. Do you have a favorite T-shirt? And if you do, what does it say on it?
I'm not a T-shirt fan.
Okay. So you're more of a... Well, you're always in the council, so you always dress up.
I got a button-down shirt.
I got you.
No, I'm not really into T-shirts.
My favorite T-shirt has to be my Wee Trawlin' T-shirt with the...
There you go. That's a good one,
I just love it because it's so comfortable. Because that's Wee Trawlin'. It's just that is a very comfortable shirt. It's like a Bella canvas, and it's like a... I don't know. It's just the way it feels. It's awesome.
In the mornings sometimes, you know, when we make our dough for our own pizzas, and when we'd come on, the whole crew was singing, "We trawling, man." You know what I mean? And we would just just have fun with it, you know.
That actually, I wrote that for Tino.
Okay,
when it passed. It was just, I heard it on the radio, free falling, and I said, "We trawling."
But he was a great singer, man.
Oh, yeah, he was.
He was a great singer. He liked to drink beer, but he was a great singer,
He loves Jolie Blanc and Waltz Across Texas. Yeah. That's one of his two favorite songs.
Yep. I've heard it many times because my brother and all live down the, you know, they got their place, Ronald Price and all got a place where they always party, you know. They're looking for a reason to party, and Tinoma's always there partying with him, and they have a ching chong band,
He always had a reason, like just waking up, and it was like, okay, we could party now.
Yeah, oh yeah. Then he used to have the War 70 fairs. The VFW fairs right across. He didn't have to go far. He had to cross the road, and he could crawl back.
He crawl back and fall asleep on the swing across the
thing. And come back for round two later. Great guy, though.
Oh, yeah. I miss Dino.
Hey, man.
All right, let's see. One more. Let's get you one more, and we're going to call. Okay, let's see. If you could bring one famous person back from the dead, who would you pick?
An idol I have that was in the government that did the same thing that their heart was into the community, Leonard Chabert.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Look what he did, South Louisiana Hospital. Has just been voted one of the best hospitals in the state of Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
he loved his people.
Yeah.
And I put myself up with the same way of with loving my people the way he loved his people. That was an idol when I was growing up. He bought me my first rod and reel fishing line. Mr. Shabab, Ms. Vionne, his wife, and my mom were best friends.
Okay.
So he was my idol. I used to like to go to their rallies and watch him. You know, get fired up all that, you know. And he just loved his people.
He did. Yeah. And I mean, yeah. I never met him before. He had passed before Norby and I became friends. So Norby and I became friends, and that's how terrible.
Yeah.
I lived in Northern Terrebonne. I live in Presque Isle, I went to Oakland and all of that. Uh-huh. I didn't get to go to La Cache or Montague, but I went to South Terrebonne, and that's when Norby and I met. And I think his dad had passed when he was at La Cache.
Right. Yeah. Probably so.
I think it was eighth grade, maybe, or ninth grade, at South Terrebonne.
Right. Yeah.
But I was still at Oakland, so I really didn't know them. But when I started hanging out with Norby and everything, and just the stories of that man, how much love he had, and like his biggest passion was for the buy-in when they opened up that hospital. You know, and then Norby would say, man, when they said they were going to close out, nope.
And that's one thing, when I get in the legislature, I'll fight keep open. It's hard to shop out. Because it helps a lot of people,
It does.
It's a wonderful hospital. It is.
Everybody thinks it's like maybe the Kmart, and that's the Target over there.
No. It's a teaching hospital.
Oh, it is.
Yes, it is. You know, so.
And I learned a lot about, I mean, I've always had the perception that it was like a lower end hospital because of, you know, insurance and stuff like that. But no, it's not a lot. They have some specialist stuff over there that's terrible.
Well, it's a training hospital. So if you're training, the people that are training got to be great doctors, what I mean? So, but that's one thing, you know, that I'll fight to keep open. But another politician, real fast, Pete Lambert.
Oh, yeah.
Councilman Pete Lambert. He was the councilman. That was his last term, was my first term. And I'd leave my house when we go to a council meeting. I'd pick him up in Montague, and we talk about government the whole way going to town. And he was the one that really taught me a lot about being a councilman and how to get stuff done. And that goes back to show you, but it was his love for his people.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Pete Lambert loved the people that he represents. And he's still killing himself to help his people out right now. You know, we put on that Ward 7 dinner. He works with us on the South Terrebonne cooking team. Mm-hmm. And it all goes back to show your love for you, your people that you really love. You know what I mean? Not fake love.
Not for a personal reason. Hey, no, I want to run for this, and then show up. I think. When you have someone in a race and they're spending a lot of money and all you hear is the name constantly over and over again, it's kind of a turnoff.
It is.
And I saw that in this race, particularly down the by. People don't want blah, 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 blah,
no,
blah. And they don't want slogans in their face. They want, hey, man, what the hell you going to do about our insurance?
Yeah.
What the hell you going to do about the roads?
Right,
what the hell you going to do about this? You know, that's what they really want to know. And I think we're moving in the right direction to put the people in place that's going to help us.
Because you don't just want negative stuff. I mean, you don't want to throw mud at your other candidate. No. Tell us what you're going to do.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
I don't like that mudslinging stuff.
I hate it.
Tell me what you're going to do. I don't care what that person did, but he's, you know, this person might be telling me what he's going to do for Terrebonne Parish, but this person's saying, don't do that. Like, no, tell me what you're going to do.
Right.
You know, like, you know, that. And not only on local, but I'm talking state and federal. You know,
I mean, don't throw up. And that's something.
But that's all it is, though.
All my campaigns, I mean, a little bit is getting thrown at me right now. But in all my campaigns, I've never talked negative about any of my opponents. You know what I mean? Let's do what's right for Terrebonne Parish.
Exactly.
Run for the right reasons. Tell us what you're going to do.
Right.
Don't sling mud.
Right.
You know what I mean? But sometimes, you know, a lot of people say, well, you're not going to fight back. I said, man, that's not my way to do it.
Well, I mean, and a lot of these people that run, I mean, you don't know them. I mean, you might, but you don't know them on a real personal level. You're not buddy-buddy with them every day.
No.
So it's like, I don't know you enough to sling mud at you. And even if I did, that's not the right thing to do.
No, it's not the right. And, you know, maybe back in the 50s and 60s, people would enjoy that. I mean, they didn't have a lot of television and stuff and all the watch stuff. But today, that's not the thing to do.
Right.
Don't throw mud.
Right.
You know
I think,
I mean?
I think, um, I think when Trump came out and he started slinging all that mud, bum, 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 when he was doing all of that, I think it kind of turned people off.
It did,
off,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It turned people on at first, but now it's like, okay, enough of that.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, you know, when he get up every morning and he tweets something, you know, you could get ready at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning, he had something you tweeted, you know, and it was funny at first, but after that it got old.
It kind of, it got old, like, you know, okay, what I mean? Enough's enough. Right, let's get back to business.
But
Dirk, I appreciate you coming in, man. It's I hope everything goes on, and whenever you want to talk again, bro.
I enjoyed the conversation, you know, because I can reminisce a little bit about my childhood and what's going on. And
you're not on a time, piece. Like, hey, what you going to do about this? What you going to do about that? And you're like, no, I like getting on a personal level, meeting all the candidates and again, good luck on everything. Thank you for the past 12 years, and I hope you can continue
your
political
career. Appreciate that, Rhett.
All right. Well, we'll see y'all next time on the DJ Rhett Podcast. We'll see y'all next time. Y'all catching?